You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
The 3CR Gardening Show is coming to you today from the Woi Wurrung Nation. We acknowledge the Wurundjeri people as the traditional owners of this land. We recognise the practices of care and cultivation of the land and waters by the First Peoples and pay our respects to their elders past and present. Wherever you are and wherever you garden, we encourage you to know whose land you're on.
Well, good morning, gardening folks, flower fanciers and plant lovers. You've tuned in to the 3CR Gardening Show. Happy Sunday to those of you who tune in live and a big hello to those of you getting your gardening show goodness via the podcast. My name is Chloe Thompson from Been There, Dug That, and in the studio with me today we have three wonderful guests, and the four of us have an even more wonderful connection. We are also about to cause you to probably have a bit of a tongue twister if you try and call in and speak to anyone, and also perhaps think there's an echo in the room. Because in the studio today we have Connie Cow. Welcome, Connie.
Hi, Chloe. Super excited.
Now, Connie's an author, a permaculturist who's got an incredible urban garden in Melbourne here, and she's laden the desk with produce as well, which is fantastic to see.
Awesome. Can't wait to share them. I hope I didn't bring too many things.
No such thing. And to continue the sea theme, we also have Cass Dowding. So welcome, Cass.
Hi, guys. Hi, Chloe.
First time guest.
First time. Very excited. Yeah. A regular listener. So it's really awesome or weird to be on the other side this morning.
Now, Cass is a podcaster with the podcast. It's a relatively new podcast, The Sentimental Gardener. And Cass's podcast takes people into the sentimentality of gardening and why people garden and the emotion and the connection with gardens, which is so beautiful. It's a lovely podcast to listen
to. Thank you.
So welcome. And Cass has also brought in some goodies from her garden as well. So we'll chat about those later on as well. And this is the echo in the room, the other Chloe. Hello.
Good morning, everyone.
You're sitting on the other side of the desk today, Chloe Foster.
Again, yeah. It's nice. I got to come in a little bit later and I just sit here and chat about plants and don't have to worry about the
panel. Don't have to push any buttons.
It's good.
Now, Chloe Foster is an author, horticultural educator, and all-round good girl.
Oh, thanks, lady.
No worries. And you've brought in some beautiful yellow fluff from your garden as well.
Yeah,
so
I've been banging on about the yellow fluff.
You have,
recently,
yep.
So I thought I'd bring some in.
I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to complain at all. Now, there is also another connection between the four of us in that we are all connected to the brand new Organic Gardener magazine. I say brand new, but this is like the 160th issue, but it's my first as editor of the Organic Gardener
magazine. Congratulations.
It's so exciting.
It's so fantastic having you at the helm of that magazine now.
Oh, thanks.
It's a really good appointment.
It's so much fun. It's exhausting and like mind blowing what goes into it.
I stopped seeing AB Bishop when she became editor of Gardening Australia magazine, and now we just text every now and then. It's a big job.
It's a big job,
and we're glad you've got it.
Yeah, yeah. It was so much fun. And Connie, Cass and Chloe have all written for this issue, the spring issue of the Organic Gardener magazine. So that's why I thought I'd get them on this weekend. We can chat about the mag, we can chat about gardening in general, and we can just have some good old-fashioned fun here in the studio. So, yeah, girls, your articles in this particular spring issue have all been fantastic, completely varied as well, which I love. And what I've tried to do as editor is bring in some fresh new voices to the mag as well, which I think is pretty exciting. So I'm having a lot of fun doing that type of thing.
For people that may not be aware, I'm going to throw a question to you if you're hosting. what is the main aim of Organic Gardener magazine? Like, why? What sets it apart from other gardening magazines?
Yeah, that's probably a really good question. I think the thing I often harp on about to people is that we have an organic heart and sustainable roots. So we're really passionate about having articles that have an organic bent or sustainable bent to them, encouraging people to grow organically, use sustainable practices in their gardens, be that, you know, in fertilisers and inputs, but also just be that in the way that they garden. I've actually commissioned publishing an article in 162, which I know sounds crazy because that's two issues
that
ahead.
Yeah.
No, that's December. Oh. But I'm commissioning an article in that one where a particular contributor, she's going to help us understand how we can even just sort of turn on some permy principles, even if we don't want to go full permaculture.
Yeah.
You know, how can we turn on some good permy principles in our garden to help it be a bit more sustainable, a bit more eco-conscious, a bit more integrated with our local environment? So making sure that our articles have that sort of a bent or that sort of a knowledge base behind them. And I'm really passionate about, and something I'm doing when I'm commissioning articles, is really making sure that the article has a takeaway message. You know, it's not just here's a beautiful garden, you know, it's here's a beautiful garden and the key takeaway messages are. So like in your article, Chloe, from Basics and Beyond, talking about fertilising, you know, we're talking about the NPKs, what is that? And then we've dived into the beyond side of things and, you know, we've dived more into learning about fertilisers and organic inputs. You know, Cass's article about Lakbundarp Test Garden, you know, obviously we see the beautiful garden in the photos, but I was really like, Cass, I really want, you know, Jack Semler's top five plants. I really want some key takeaway messages that we can get from the garden, because you can obviously come and look and go, oh, beautiful garden, beautiful plants, great, but what do I take away from
it? Yeah, and what wouldn't you necessarily pick up if you were just there?
Yeah, exactly.
As a punter. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm really passionate about making sure that the articles give us something back. So, yeah, I'd say that's probably
our
difference.
Like I've noticed like a lot of layout changes, which are really exciting. The contents page looks different. Oh, it's very easy to read, actually.
Yes.
Yep.
So it was quite fun, actually, doing the whole redesign of it. I mean, it's if you've read the mag before, it's not completely different. It's still got a lot of the stuff that people know and love. But we were really passionate about just making it feel fresh and new. And I wanted to really improve readability as well. So, yeah, as you said, something like having the contents page over a DPS.
Yes, I'm learning double all this page spread.
I'm learning all this publishing lingo, folks. So your DPS stands for double page spread. So now the contents page goes across a double page spread, which just means you can open up and see the contents of the magazine over two pages, which sounds logical, but
probably easier to find when you're flicking through on a double page as well.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. But I tell you what, I had no idea about what went into a magazine. It's been a really big eye-opener. Absolute eye-opener for sure.
What have been the big, you do it like that.
Well, I suppose it's the thought process behind it. You know, so we sit down, I say we, horticultural editor Steve Falcioni and myself, we sit down, we have a little Teams meeting because he's up in Sydney, and we have a little chat about, you know, okay, so this issue's coming out this particular month, what do we want to talk about? And so we'll just sort of, we call it throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks. We'll just throw ideas around. And then we'll be like, oh, there's an article in that. Oh, that sounds good. Yeah, that's seasonally relevant. Oh, that person was telling me something about that the other day. And then through that process, we literally end up with the articles in the magazine. Sometimes it takes two teams meetings to get an issue. And sometimes there might be holes in the issue, but then over the next 2 weeks, we'll be texting each other and going, oh, that's good. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, let's do that. So, yeah, that process has been really fascinating. But then, you know, like as an editor, there's things I didn't necessarily realise that an editor did. And I'm not sure if this is for all magazines, but, you know, I'm managing the budget, so I'm making sure that the magazine comes in on budget. The design and the layout, obviously the art director does that, but, you know, she sends me the PDFs of the pages saying, what do you think?
Yeah.
What do you want changed?
Final sign-off on it.
Yeah. I mean, as well as obviously the proofing of articles and things as well, and then the backwards and forwards between me and Steve, and then me and the subs editor, and me and the writer, and whew.
There's a lot of logistics involved.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, it's really fun though.
Yeah.
It is really, really fun. Yeah.
I'm super excited to see what lays ahead.
Thanks so
and
much,
there's
Connie.
8 issues a year?
Yeah, so 8 issues a year. So we come out about every 6 or 7 weeks.
Yeah, okay.
AB, who works for Gardening Australia Mag, our sister mag, she says, you know, oh, you're so lucky you get like a little breather. Yeah. I tell you what, it doesn't feel like I get a breather.
I don't know how they do it monthly at Gardening Australia Mag.
Yeah.
It's a big job.
They must just be constantly thinking. I mean, I feel like I'm constantly thinking, but I know it will get easier, the whole process as it goes along. So, yeah, but it's fun.
Good. Onward and upward, mate.
Yes.
Well done.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And this first issue is in stores now. You can buy it at, you know, your Woolies, your Coles, all good news agents. You can also subscribe, obviously, as well, and you won't miss it. It's got lots of bright yellow tomatoes, red tomatoes and nasturtiums on the cover. So it stands out and looks really good. And there is a free bonus planting guide inside, which you can pull out and put on your wall. So it's got warm season on one side and cool season on the other. So full 12-month planting guide. I'm holding it up. I know none of you can see it, but, you know, you get the idea.
Good colours. Actually, I was looking at the climate maps the other day, and it's a good climate map.
It is actually a good climate map.
I love a climate map.
And we have such varied climates here.
We do.
Yeah. And even in the state itself.
Well, that's it. And even in the state, and then you get the microclimates within the generalistic climates.
The suburb you're in or the town that you're in.
Yeah. So I think we even put that disclaimer up the side of the page, actually, in that, you know, there is microclimates within the climatic zones. So,
yeah.
You know, you don't have to take it to the letter of the law. Feel like stretching it if you want to stretch it. Feel like.
Yeah.
Nothing like pushing the boundaries. So for those of the listeners that are tuned in particularly early, I thought I might do you all a service and let you know that I do actually have 5 copies of this Organic Gardener magazine to give away. So if you would like to call in, Amy, our producer, standing in the studio, ready to take your name and postal address. So I've got 5 issues of the mag if you would like to call in, listeners, and nab your copy of the spring issue. Now, I had an absolute squeal when I saw this on the shelf for the first time. And Chloe, imagine
you... Phone number?
Oh, the phone number. Oh, my goodness. Thanks, Chloe. I don't know. I'm asleep. The phone number to call in if you would like to call in is 94190155. So it's 94190155. Chloe, I was just saying that I had an absolute squeal when I saw this on the shelf for the first time. And I texted you and told you that, and you were like, oh, my God, yes, I know that feeling because of your book.
Yeah.
So how long has it been out now?
Almost 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
My baby.
So exciting. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks, Connie. Yeah, it's been – I've had so many people, like, send me messages when they've seen it out in the wild.
Yeah.
It's so – it's really cool. I haven't been out – I've been busy and I work full-time. So I haven't been out to many shops to see it. So everyone's been sending me so many photos. I'm like, I really need to get out to some local bookshops and go and say hello and see it in the wild. But I did go up to Verso Books in Healesville, which is a lovely little local bookshop, and Collins in Croydon.
Yep.
And saw it in real life when it first came out. So that
Do you
was good.
Like sign them when you're
I
in the
did
store?
Sign oh, them. Nice. Yeah. That was cool. It's a bit of an out-of-body experience. Like you see authors signing books, and for me doing it, it's all still very surreal. But it's been really fun. And
nice.
Yeah, everyone has been so kind and really supportive and send some good stuff.
And are you doing any public talks or tour, like book tour type thing?
Yeah, I'm about to set off on a world tour. No.
Around Melbourne.
Yeah, around Melbourne. I've got a few things coming up. I'm gonna be at the Willsmere Community Garden Spring Fair in a couple of weeks. That's at Q, the Willsmere Community Garden, near the roundabout on Willsmere Road.
Mm-hmm.
Be talking there, and there's some – it's a really lovely, really active community garden. Sip and Bloom at St Anne's Winery. Sandra Swartz and I are going to be lugging boxes of Restore and Rookie Gardener up to
– Out west?
Up to Murnyong, yeah,
yes,
in mid-October. And – Canberra Writers Festival.
Cool.
With a couple of other garden writers. There's a few things on. Yeah, got a bit on. But it's sort of spaced apart, so I think it's sustainable. But yeah, just riding the wave of it all, which has been really fun.
Yeah, you've got to do that, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's a really good read, and as the book title, The Rookie Gardener, suggests, it really is aimed at beginner gardeners. But even a gardener who's maybe, you know, self-taught or in the early stages, and, you know, I often find that newbie gardeners or people have only been gardening for maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 years, you know, a lot of the information that they've got has just been sort of tidbits.
Yeah.
So having a book where all that information is in one place, yeah, really good one, I think, for that.
Yeah, I've so I've had a few people go, oh, I've been gardening for years and I've been reading it and I've been learning stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, that's really good.
Yeah.
So, it covers gardening from woe to go, really, and, you know, working out your soil to, you know, suitable plants and pests and diseases and, you know, in a compact way, sort of. So, it's good that more experienced gardeners have learnt from it too.
I
really like about it is how, like, easy it is to read. I was just having a look and I like how there's little chunks of information. There's a lot of diagrams, there's a lot of, you know, mind maps and stuff. So it doesn't feel very overwhelming, especially if you're just getting started.
Mm.
So it feels like a really manageable book and there's just so much information at the same time.
Thanks, really, Connie. We were really conscious to not have reams of text and lots of little fun headings and heaps of photos of lots of different types of gardens and flow charts and tables, dot points, all that sort of thing to visually break it down too.
Such a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, good morning to those of you who are just tuning in. You've tuned into the 3CR Gardening Show. My name is Chloe Thompson from Been There, Dug That. And in the studio with me today is Connie Cow, Chloe Foster and Cass Dowding. We're having a little bit of a celebration of the fact that the first issue of The Organic Gardener that I am editor of is out on the shelves now. And Connie, Chloe and Cass are all contributors. So,
could you foresee?
I know. What was your phrase that you said, Cass?
Oh, the 4Cs are radio.
We're not the 3CR.
Not the 3CR today.
Now, Cass, tell us a little bit about your podcast. Why did you start it and where are you at with it?
So officially I started back in May, but the idea came to me end of last year where I was starting to write about gardening. I'm just a home gardener, lots of passion, a little bit of knowledge. And I noticed that my garden doesn't have an aesthetic, but it's like a collection of plants based on memories of people that I've loved or, you know, cuttings people have given me. Yep. So I can look at a plant and then I'm like, oh, then I have a memory attached to it. And the more I was chatting with gardeners or designers, they're like, oh, they were sharing the similar type of stories. I'm like, huh, there's something there. And so I started writing about that, but writing takes a long time. And then collecting people's stories and writing about them. So someone said, why don't you do a podcast? And I'm like, okay. And that just started the ball rolling. I went to the Australian Landscape Conference in March and sort of talked to people in the industry about it. And then, you know, got a bit more confidence and just asked the first person. So the first person I asked was actually Hayden Schuler from Varea Gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes and does the hedges at our house. And I said, I'm thinking of doing a podcast. I would just love to collect stories of people who don't necessarily share their stories on social media or, you know, have a platform and talk about, you know, plants and memories. So that was literally how it started. And then from there, I asked the next person and the next person. And next thing you know, I've done 8 episodes now and then another 6 to go by the end of the year. So, yeah, the premise of the podcast is it's a gardening podcast, but it's not really about how to do gardening. It's about the stories behind people and their plants and why they love them and the memories and all that lovely feeling. You know, the memories attached to them. So, So the plants are kind of the doorway into people's life stories, and they're not always people who are in the plant or horticulture industry. I interviewed my mother-in-law for one episode, which was so great.
That was lovely.
Because I find that once you start telling stories through plants, then it just opens up conversations that you wouldn't necessarily have with people. So it's become the greatest thing I've like given my energy to in a long time. So it's very rewarding.
It's such a special idea because gardening is, there's so much emotion to gardening. Gardeners are very sensitive. Like, we're sensitive to weather patterns and climate and what's going on. Like, you have to be really in tune with that. And I think a lot of gardeners, I mean, this is very broadly, but a lot of gardeners are pretty in tune with their emotions and what's going on in their body too. So it's such a beautiful connection that you found and a little niche, a lovely little niche that you're honing in on.
It's a really great way to connect with people through the stories that they're, you know, sharing through gardens and plants.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I always find the episodes, I think I've listened to nearly all of the eight, but I always find that even if you are just telling stories, I'm doing air quotes, you know, you're actually getting knowledge at the same time as well. Even in the stories, there is knowledge. Totally.
It's so true. And I do say that. Like, it started off just being, oh, no, this is not a how-to. But through the story, like, I did an episode with Deb Collette, who's like the Dahlia Queen of Australia. You know, she's a show judge. And she just shared, oh, my goodness, all this incredible knowledge. And it's just this organic way that people share and pass down knowledge. And that's what I observed over my time of, you know, going to garden shows or going to visit people's gardens. I put the connection that we've always been sharing stories throughout, you know, passing on information from generation. It's not always through books or, you know, it can just be a casual walk around the garden. And then you pick up, you know, as gardeners, we pick up tidbits of, you know, people, from people about how to grow a certain plant, and then you carry that on with you to the next person. And yeah, it was just a way to, you know, connect all of that together. So yeah, it's very exciting.
And you got the most beautiful voice for it too.
Oh, really?
Doesn't she?
Yes.
Yeah, very such grand. A soothing voice. Yes.
Maybe it's, no, it's hilarious. I used to be a nurse and a midwife, so that's my background. So maybe those days of talking women through their contractions and trying to keep us all calm.
Yeah. So there's not a hint of Bogan in you at all. Lovely.
Thanks, Chloe.
Now, Chloe Foster has been a guest. I think you've got me lined up for later on in the year.
Yep.
Have you got Connie on the books yet?
Connie, would you like to be a guest?
I would love to come. I have so many stories here.
Okay, awesome. So there you go. Yeah, it was great. I loved, like I said, you get to find out those little bits extra about people. So, of course, we talked about Chloe's book, but then we talked about, like, your journey into horticulture and, you know, the stories about your pa's garden. Anyway, you could talk about all the stories, but it's so great now because when I think about Chloe tells his story about carrots, now I look at carrots and I'm like, Chloe, carrots.
Oh, you know? Nice.
So, yeah, so I've got... Exciting. And I've got a new episode coming out tomorrow.
Oh, who's the guest?
Jane Edmondson.
Oh, beautiful.
Lovely. Big gun guest.
Yeah, big gun guest. She is the most...
I'm excited for this one.
Down to earth, generous, beautiful soul. So I'm really excited to share her story.
Yeah. What fun. And you recorded that one, you telling me, in the Botanic Gardens.
Yes.
So you do. You get out and about to record your potties as well.
Yeah, I meet people in person. It's kind of a selfish reason so that I can go and see their gardens. But I just love talking to people in person. So, yeah, that was exciting. We recorded it up near the Arid Garden in the Australian dry land section. Yeah, so that was great.
Can I ask maybe a peek behind the curtain, why Jane wanted to film at the Royal Botanic Gardens, record?
Yeah, good question. I don't know if it's going to give too much away from the episode tomorrow, but no, she has spent a lot of time in the area that is now the Drylands Garden, and she was quite instrumental in putting out the thought to Andrew Laidlaw that he should do something with that area, which then has become the Drylands Garden.
What a gem.
So, but she spends a lot of time just in her own time reading in the gardens. And so that was a really, you know, quite sentimental spot for her.
Yeah.
So that's why we recorded there. My first outdoor recording. So you'll hear mowers and aeroplanes and birds.
Atmos.
Watch it too? Is there like a video version?
Oh, Chloe, Connie, yes. It will come. There will be snippets. But look, I'm a one woman band at the moment. So... audio editing is already stretching me, but I'm, you know, leaning into doing more videos. So, yes, it'll come.
Can't wait to listen.
And you can listen to it, you know, Spotify, iTunes, all the places, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yep. good to know. we've had a question come through. How do I get rid of oxalis between my mondo grass? It's all over my garden, which is a couple of acres big, says Andrew from Menzies Creek.
Oh, Andrew, that's a
poor thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's an awful job.
It is, isn't it? The joys of oxalis.
So, I reckon you could get 100 chickens. You know, my chickens love that.
They love the chooks oxalis. Go for oxalis.
They yeah. do. They
yeah,
love it.
They'd leave yeah. the mondo grass alone.
They would.
Oh, yeah, I didn't yeah. hear the grass. I just smashed onto the oxalis. Yeah.
The good thing with oxalis, Andrew, it is a cool season weed, so it will die off as we start to get some warmer days. And the problem with oxalis is that it loves disturbed soil. So, like, when you planted that mondo grass, you probably find that you actually turned up the little bulblets as well without knowing. And so that's why it's particularly thick in amongst your mondo grass. I at home successfully will spray out oxalis by burning it with an organic herbicide called Slasher, and it won't burn or it won't hurt and kill the mondo grass. You might burn a few tips, but it'll successfully burn the foliage of the oxalis. Now, it's not systemic, so it's not going to actually go down and kill the bulblet. What it does is it weakens the bulblet over time because the bulblet is not producing foliage growth. So that's how I tackle oxalis at my place, and I'll go around, you know, I get oxalis popping up between my Poa labs, you know, under my lavender, and so I'll spray it out. And my big tip with oxalis is to not let it flower, because as soon as it flowers, it's producing more of those bulblets underground.
But if it's growing in between the mondo grass, it's going to be hard to spray it and miss the mondo.
It will like, be.
I think there's going to be damage to the mondo grass, whatever yep. you do, whether it's digging it out, whether it's using Slasher or even or something else.
Yep.
That's really tricky.
Yeah. If anything, you just sort of, I suppose, live in that delight of the fact that the warmer weather's going to get rid of it for you. Or it's going to make it dormant again.
And it'll just come up again.
Yep.
I'm like spitballing, you know, 2 acres is a lot of area
that's
to
huge.
Get a kanga and dig up and, you know, turn it all over and mulch really heavily over it. You know, maybe if he's willing to get rid of some of the mondo to get the oxalis under control, then that might be the sort of collateral damage. But it's really tricky. With regular, I know we're talking about organic gardening this morning, but with regular herbicides, with like glyphosate as the active ingredient, it's most effective when it's flowering because it's a systemic chemical.
Mm-hmm.
It takes the chemical down the floral tube to the bulblet and will kill. And because the bulb or the plant pulls so much energy from the bulb when it's flowering, that the bulb almost becomes non-existent, and it's most effective at dealing with it that way when it's flowering. It just depends what you want to use and how you want to do it.
It probably also depends a bit on the mondo grass, if it's one of those giant ones that sort of sits up a bit, or if it's one of the ones that's really quite flat and low to the ground.
Yeah, and how dense the mondo grass is.
Yeah.
So you might be able to spot spray or paint between it with whatever chemical that you want to use, or burn it, get a torch.
Yes.
I wonder if the mondo grass would – it's pretty – juicy.
It's pretty juicy. I think a flame weeder wouldn't touch it too much.
I reckon.
I mean, I've used a flame weeder around just Lamandra tunica, and it doesn't touch the Lamandra.
That would laugh. They'd be like, nice and cozy.
Thanks.
I reckon a flame weeder, the mondo would get a little bit fried, but again, they've got such tight bases.
Yeah.
Of them, that probably.
And like you can literally wave the flame weeder near the oxalis and it goes, ugh.
Or even like a steam as well.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't hurt. That wouldn't hurt the mondo. If you could get a steam wand, that would also fry the oxalis. Yep. And then you just have to keep doing that. You just need to be really vigilant.
Yep.
So over the next few years, that's your job, like frying the oxalis in whatever way.
And it does. It does reduce the thickness of the oxalis forest that comes up.
Definitely.
Particularly if you just get it before it flowers.
Yeah.
Just keep getting it before it flowers.
Yeah.
And rather than like a forest of oxalis, you'll end up with a few little random plants.
Yeah.
Which, thank goodness it does work.
Good luck, Andrew.
Yes, good luck. Good luck, definitely. Someone says, hi, ladies, listening from Semaphore, South Australia.
I had to Google that.
Where's that?
It's a suburb in Adelaide.
Oh.
Right on the beach. How gorgeous, near Port Adelaide.
That sounds beautiful.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's another note here about an event. I drove to Emerald to support the Open Garden Victoria. The Tilopia Gardens open today, 10 till 4. It's a stunning 10-acre garden, a horticultural sanctuary, sweeping panoramic views, rare botanical species, Geomia lilies, variegated Philotheca. Ah, it sounds absolutely gorgeous. So if you jump on to Open Garden Victoria and search out Tilopia Gardens, it's open 10 till 4 today. There are so many gardens at the moment open with Open Gardens Vic.
There's a cracking spring season that they've lined up. Like every weekend, you're like, you could go every weekend and they're really cool gardens.
Yeah, absolutely. But I always say to people, if you're new to an area or you're new to gardening in your area, look up on Open Gardens Vic. Find things that are in sort of 15, 20 k's of you and go and snoop on their gardens, because what works there will likely work at your place.
Amen.
Yeah, so big tip if you're new to an area, go and snoop on other people's gardens. And this way you can
legally
do it.
Legally snooping.
This way you can do it legally. For those of you who've just tuned in, my name's Chloe Thompson from Been There, Dug That. In the studio with me today, we have Connie Cow, Chloe Foster and Cass Dowding, and you're listening to the 3CR Gardening Show. Is there another message? No, there isn't another message. But just in case you would like to call in with a gardening question or to chat, you can call us in on the talkback line, which is 9419 0155, or if you would prefer to send us a text message, you're welcome to as well. The phone number is 0488 809 855. Now, just a heads up, we can't see photos in text messages, but if you do have a photo question, you can email us on 3cr.gardening@gmail.com. Now, I have very sillily, is that a word? It is now.
Yeah, we'll go with
it. I've forgotten to bring in the printout of events, but I will bring that up on my phone next time you girls start chatting deep in conversation. So, but Connie, you have brought in some incredible things on your desk. One of them looks like a watermelon.
Yeah, it looks very much like a watermelon. I think it looks also like a soccer ball. It weighs a ton. It's really great for a garden workout. So it is a shark fin melon. Has anybody tried this before?
Never. I've never tried melons in Melbourne. I always thought that you couldn't, they never really worked. But I have a friend that lives in Preston and she's gotten little melons.
Yeah.
Growing and fruiting and been eating them.
Like watermelons.
Small
like,
watermelons.
Yeah,
a small, I can't, is there a sugar baby?
Or sugar baby, yes. Sugar baby. I love those.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is actually more of like a savoury kind of type. It's more for like cooking. It's very similar to, I would say, a stringy zucchini, if that makes sense. So it's got like a really stringy texture inside, kind of like those pumpkins that I...
Pumpkins?
Oh, like the spaghetti squash.
Yeah, spaghetti squash. Sorry. I was like, what is that called again? Inside, so the texture's really similar to that, and it's very commonly used in soups. You cut it up and you just use them in chunks. It soaks up the flavour, but you can also use it to make candied like desserts and stuff as well. So what I really like about it is that it is a perennial squash. So over here, you can plant it once and it dies down in winter. And the most amazing thing is that you could keep this for like 2 years in your pantry and it wouldn't go off, because it's so like, it's got such a thick, hard skin.
Yeah.
Oh.
In fact, you need a really sharp knife to cut it open. But it's really great for one of those things that you can grow where if you want to just like live off what you're growing, you always kind of have this as like a backup at home.
Is the plant perennial or the fruit perennial? So the fruit will store for ages.
Yes. Oh no. So the plant is a perennial.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So you know how like most like zucchinis, pumpkins, they're all annuals. This one is a perennial. So in Melbourne, if you don't get frost, it would just keep going. If you get frost, it might die down a little bit or just to the ground, kind of like scarlet runner beans.
Oh yeah.
You know, very similar, and it'll just pop right back up again. This one, actually, I harvested it in August, which is very, like, an odd time to harvest a fruit, because it didn't quite die down and it just started growing in the corner. And so I didn't even realise I had it. So yeah, I thought I'd bring it in because it's quite a visual sight to
see. It is. It's a dark green and then it's got a mottled creamy white, what would you say? Like it looks like a paint splatter.
It's like
splatter.
A variegated skin.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, is the plant like a zucchini or is it like a pumpkin vine?
Oh, it's good question. I totally forgot to describe it. It is like a pumpkin vine. In fact, it is very prolific. So I almost recommend growing it in a not so fertile spot if you want to like manage its size.
Good tip.
I grow it like somewhere where I have pretty bad soil and it grows maybe like 3 or 4 melons. And that's good for me because I don't actually want such a big plant because it will grow like a choco, you know, like a really happy choco plant. So I want to grow a lot of different things. So I put it there and it does really well.
Yeah. Do you grow it up trellis or on wires or anything?
I have it up a trellis that separates me and my neighbours. I love my neighbours, to clarify.
Disclaimer.
Yeah, it's just like a nice spot to grow it. I will warn that it likes to go to your neighbour's yard. So you have to, every few weeks I go there and I bring it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Awesome.
That sounds like a great one to give a go, Connie. We do have a question here. Let's have a chat with Jill. Are you there from Malvern East or East Malvern?
Yes, no, Brighton, East Brighton.
Oh, East Brighton. Sorry about that.
Jill from East Brighton. No, hello. I met Jill at the Larkbundup Test Garden Tour.
Oh, how fun. Yeah, I love that.
Which was fantastic. And in fact, I'm ringing today to say that last week I went with the fabulous Virginia Haywood did a tour of the Botanic Gardens, which I absolutely loved. And even though I'm familiar with the gardens, I just learned so much new stuff that made it a much richer experience. It was just it was a lot of fun too. You know, she's just so knowledgeable.
Yeah, I have been meaning to do one of her tours. I might even do it these school holidays. That's a good idea.
Yes. Look, I don't know how often she does it. I think, gosh, she's a good volunteer, isn't she? She
does
the gardening show and the Botanic Gardens and who knows what else.
She's a gem.
I know.
I would have walked past because they only had a few flowers out still, but I hadn't ever seen the yellow camellia before. You know, things like that has such a deep knowledge and also just, you know, the stories behind the gardens and the plants and the people and everything. It was, just wonderful.
Yeah.
And if she's listening in, I haven't put anything up on the socials, but she knows I'm a techno moron and I find these things a little difficult. I will get round to it.
That's okay. Now, you have a question about your Canidia or your running postman.
Yes, that's right. It's flowering, it has grown, but it's sort of looking really pale and wan, the leaves, I just wondered whether you had any suggestions about what I might do to make it a happier plant.
What sort of soil have you got it growing in?
Look, I'm on the sand belt here, and I was wondering, you know, I used to see them on Arthur's Seat, which is an acidic, you know, granite kind of place, but here, of course, I think I'm more alkaline, and I'm wondering if that's the problem. And if so, what should I give it?
It might not necessarily be, you know, pH, but more so nutrients or lack thereof. So you could, if you've got some compost, there's a few different ways you can fertilise. But if you've got some compost, probably maybe incorporate that into the area, or just sort of sprinkle that and lightly zhuzh it into the soil, into the top of the soil, and then, you know, lightly mulch around it with some wood chips.
Yes, okay, just lift up the soil.
Yeah.
Of course, it sits very close to the ground and just sit it on top of the compost and the mulch.
Otherwise, you know, a native fertiliser will do, but you wouldn't need heaps of, you wouldn't, the native peas don't need heaps of nutrients.
I was going to say, mine's growing on the side of a cliff.
No, well,
that's what I was.
You're in more clay soil, so they probably can access the nutrients a bit more than the sandy soil.
Yeah,
it's probably falling through.
Yes. Well, that's the thing with my sandy soil. You know, I've been pouring mulch into it for 35 years.
Yeah,
you have. Bloody great.
I struggle to picture that people, you know, in Melbourne spaces have such sandy soils, but it's so true.
Yes, Melbourne is a very variable.
It is.
Variable place. just in a sort of a light, slightly lighter mode, when you were talking to the poor chap who's got oxalis all through his mondo grass. And I was thinking of Stephen Ryan's stock answer when people ask, how can I get rid of oxalis? When it, you know, put a for sale sign out the front of your...
He would also go in to defend the oxalis too. He's got like the national collection of oxalis. But there's only one, a couple of weedy ones. It's a big genus of plants.
Yes, I know, but we all struggle with the weedy ones.
Yeah, gosh, yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Anyway, yes.
Thanks so much, Jill.
Thanks, panel. Yeah, great discussion as always.
All right, thanks so much.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye then.
Bye. Oh, that's fun. What a good laugh, hey? And so good to hear about Jin's tours of the Botanic Gardens. Can you actually see who's giving the tour when you book the tour? Do you happen to know anyone?
It's slightly different format to what I used to do at Cranbourne Gardens, but with Melbourne you book with the particular tour guide. So all of the I'm going to get some of this wrong, but I think all the tour guides at Melbourne Gardens have developed their own tours.
Okay, right.
So you would be able... Yeah, I think you are able to book in with
specific
a particular
guide.
Person.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah, no, it's on my to-do list for sure. We have another caller. Jess has got a question about a citrus tree growing in the pot versus growing in the ground. So let's have a chat with Jess. Hi, Jess, are you there? Oh, I didn't just hang up on you. There you are. Are you there, Jess? Jess, are you there? Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Hi, Jess.
Hi. How are you?
Good, good. You've got a question about a citrus tree growing in a ground or in the pot? Have you got one or the other?
Yes, I've got a lemon tree and a kumquat tree, both that are in pots. And I was just wondering if they would grow better in the ground or if they're okay to stay in the pot.
Are they healthy and happy at the moment or how are they looking?
Yeah, pretty healthy. The kumquat tree has got quite a bit of fruit. Lemon tree, it's not so much, maybe two or three.
Okay.
But they've got flowers, so I assume that they're growing relatively well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Connie's got lots of pots, so do you want to chat?
Oh, yeah. Hi, Jess. How's it going? How big do you want these trees to grow? Are you looking to grow, smaller trees?
Yeah, probably a smaller tree. I've got limited space, so I wouldn't want them to grow too large.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a pot is a really good way to manage that and keep them small. So I would probably keep them in pots. Citrus does really well in pots. I grow a lot of mine in pots as well. I personally recommend going for one grafted on dwarf rootstock. They are a little bit slower growing, but they're much more easier to manage in terms of like pruning and just keeping them in pots long term. So I reckon keep up with the pots. Just make sure they get good water and fertilizing in summer. They are really hungry and you should be good to go and grow.
Yeah, I've got my lemon tree's been in a pot all its life, Jess, and it's a male lemon and it happily produces and I keep the same pot, but it's a big pot, like 40, 50 centimetres across. Yeah. And I do just refresh the potting mix every 2 years or so. Take, tip it out, generally a two-person job, tip it out, refresh the potting mix, put it back, keep it fertilised and fed, and it's happy as Larry.
And your lemon tree, if it's still young, is it still young?
It's pretty young. I've probably got it about a year or so ago.
Oh, okay. That makes complete sense in terms of not having that many lemons. They probably start producing like in their third year and you'd get smaller crops before you get the really big ones as they mature.
Yeah. Oh, great. Patience as always.
Patience is a virtue. Yeah. Hopefully that helps, Jess.
Yeah, very helpful. I will keep them in their pots.
Okay, cool. Happy growing.
So
no worries.
Thank you.
Bye.
Connie, with the citrus that you have in pots, do you get citrus leaf miner? Or Chloe, do you get citrus leaf miner on
it?
Occasionally, I've maybe had once or twice, but not a huge, huge amount.
Mm. I've only ever had it once, and it was because I pruned. It was that time. I think I was pruning too early, and they were still like growing. They were growing fresh growth when the citrus leaf miner was like most active. I think that was like early autumn or something. Yeah. I can't remember.
Late summer to early autumn, they're active.
Yeah. So now I just make sure I prune like after harvest, so spring.
Yeah, perfect.
And I haven't had any issues at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just that rogue pruning.
Rogue pruning or even like fertilizing too late in summer.
Yes, exactly.
Puts on too much new growth and it's just fabulous fodder for the leaf miners.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yep. Good tip there. Mm. I did actually find some events on this weekend, so I thought I'd just quickly read those out before we come over to you, Cass, to chat about your beautiful daffodil.
Daffodil.
Mm. On this weekend is the Yay Garden Expo. It's on today on Sunday, 9 till 3 p.m. The Yay Garden Expo, $10 for adults and kids under 16 are free. It's a really popular event. I've spoken there before. There's obviously free parking, plants on sale. There's generally speakers and things as well. So that's in Yay if you're interested in heading out to that. On the following weekend, where there is... Is it the following weekend? Saturday the 4th and 5th of October, or is it the weekend after? I need a calendar in front of me. There's the Bolobec Garden Lovers Fair, 10 till 4, and $18 for adults and children under 16 are free. It used to be known as just the Garden Lovers Fair, but now it's the Bolobec Garden Fair, and it's one of the largest and most popular garden fairs in Victoria, with over 50 specialist unique stall holders, and generally over 3,000 people attend every event, so that's worthwhile getting down to that one. On the same weekend, the 4th and the 5th of October, is the Great Otway Garden Festival. That's 10 till 3, both days over that weekend, the 4th and the 5th. So that's down the Great Ocean Road area, and you can see local Indigenous plants, inspiring local gardens, and just the general community in the Otways who are passionate about gardening. A Google on that one will lead you to the website for information. So that's probably enough at the moment. There is so many events on at the moment, isn't there?
We actually had this time of the year.
It's so good. We had to start a spreadsheet for the amount of events, and the October is just jam-packed, isn't it?
The Mattingley Botanical Sip and Bloom is on the next weekend.
It is in a month.
On the 18th and 19th of October. Up in Murnyong at St Anne's.
And that's near Bacchus Marsh, if people don't know.
Just on the other side of Bacchus Marsh. I think he had a couple of thousand, maybe over a few thousand people there last year, Michael, that organises it.
Mm-hmm.
And wine, plants.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wine is a plant, you know, it's grape juice.
I argue that about gin. It's got botanicals in it.
With a lot of, local growers, it's a really big, good event.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
So is this its second year? Or
I think it's the second or third year.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Oh, good fun. And you're speaking, aren't you?
Yeah, Sandra Swartz and I are speaking.
Oh, fun.
Yep.
Yes. Very good. Someone has texted in. Vicky and Peter from Notting Hill have texted in. We met Jill from East Brighton on Virginia's walk last week. We've been on a walk with Virginia probably 8 or 9 times. Virginia then came to see our garden afterwards that will be open on Saturday the 8th of November through the Waverley Garden Club. And yesterday at Tilopia Gardens, there was Virginia. So you've definitely had your dose of
Virginia. Actually cloned her. So you probably see her in a few different places.
That'll be why. So that's a good tip, actually, about the Waverley Garden Club having some open gardens on Saturday the 8th of November. So maybe a Google and their website will lead you to that as well.
I think they do it every year, if I'm not wrong. I went to one of the earlier ones. Mm-hmm. So I might be wrong, but Monash Council was one of the earliest councils that did the open gardens in the area. So they normally have quite a few, you know, in surrounding suburbs. So you can make a real good day out of it.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. What fun. Do love a good garden, Snoop.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Now, Cass, you have bought in the most frilly tutu-looking daffodil. Do you know what it is?
Yes, it is a Dick Wilden daffodil. Oh. I got it from Red Earth Bulbs.
Okay.
Yeah, first time growing it, and I'm really terrible at naming things when I pop them in pots, so... When it popped up, I was like, oh, what is that? And it is just gorgeous. Mm. Like, as you said, frilly, frothy.
Yeah.
I plant daffodils because they pop up this time of year, which helps me remember my pop's birthday, which was today was his birthday. He's no longer with us. But he was a gardener who came to gardening late in life after he had a stroke. So gardening kind of saved his life. He was paralyzed, learnt to walk again, learnt to talk again, but only had one arm that worked. Oh. So it was so amazing to watch, you know, someone he, like 20 years, loved gardening with one arm, would be out there doing everything, love tomatoes. So, yeah, I love daffodils because they pop up this time of year and, yeah, remind me of Pop, who was always in the garden when we'd go to visit.
Yeah. Yes. That's so good.
That's such a lovely story.
Yes. Yeah.
I love daffodils are such special plants. And jonquils too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they, you know, the different colour, like they're just such a happy plant.
They are, aren't they? Like when you know, you've gone through winter, which can be sometimes, you know, it's hard to get out in the garden. Everyone's nodding. Totally. Yeah. And then you see these beautiful yellow colours poking their heads out and you're like, oh, you've got to go out there and have a look at them. And, yeah, it just brings, reminds you of the joy. And
this one's pretty because it's a double, it's got a double bloom on it.
Yeah, you tell me more about it.
No, I need Jane Tonkin here to tell you.
Yeah,
they're so much nicer than the like ones you see, just the standard types.
Yeah, it's frilly in a cute way.
It's quite big too.
Almost like a tulip, like a frilly tulip kind of front. I grow some frilly tulips.
The other sort of daffodils I love are just the teeny tiny ones.
Yeah.
The little petticoats.
Tete-a-tete.
They're so cute. Yeah. But the big ones are really cool too.
Yeah. And I love how they multiply each year. So it's like your pot's like reminder in the garden just like grows and grows without much effort.
Yeah. He planted some in the grass in front of the lemon tree. So then that's what they did is they like naturalized in the ground. They'd be pop up out of the grass.
Mm.
And, yeah, it was just wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got my daffodils underneath the maple because obviously they come up at this time of the year when the maple's still fairly bare. Mm. In fact, it's completely bare still. And so, yeah, you get that nice splash of colour and splash of yellow. But I've actually started to plant some hellebores and I brought one in that's still in a pot today. I'm putting some hellebores in the same spot. So they actually work quite nicely mixed in with the daffodils and then under the bare maple.
100%. Yeah. Oh, so beautiful.
It's really pretty. But the hellebore I brought in is a new breed or a new cultivar called Frost Kissed. And there's a couple of Frost Kiss. It's really hard not to put an extra T on the end there. It's been bred so that the flower blooms actually sit very forward.
Yes, because they normally hang down and droop. Yeah.
They normally have almost like a bell-like head, whereas you girls can see that they're literally smiling at you from where they are in the pot.
So are there a few different ones like that in different colours?
I brought in a deep burgundy one, but then there's one that's more of a pale pink and then there's one that's more white with sort of very pale pink edges. And I think they look really sweet against the yellow yellow daffodils.
So. They'd be fabulous in all those like shadier kind of spots as well.
Yeah, they are really good. And these ones will often hold their foliage all throughout summer as well, so you'll get that green carpet of foliage. I was asking the crew at PGA, what's the tip to get them to hold their foliage through summer? And they said keeping the water up to them.
Good tip.
So I was like, right, otherwise their foliage will die back completely.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. The plant's not dead. It will come back in the winter time. So, yeah, really beautiful plant, hellebores.
Yeah.
They can actually be quite weedy because a lot of the original or, you know, hellebores that you sort of see in a lot of other gardens will set seed and very happily spread. These guys have sterile seeds, so they won't spread. So if you're worried about them spreading, that's a good one too.
We've got some nice patches of, just be the species form, Helleborus orientalis, and just underneath an elm tree on campus. And it's really lovely.
It's beautiful.
But they're just this, well, I shouldn't say plain, but they're the pinky greeny flower colour.
Yep.
And the spectacular cultivars that you can get are a little bit step above.
They are, and I find that the cultivars often have longer stems that sort of sit more above the leaves, so you get to enjoy them a little bit more.
They make a good cut flower.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
Do they last long in a vase?
I don't know, but just long stems.
Yeah.
I want to cut that.
I had a friend when I was nursing and she lived in Mombog and she would bring the hellebores in and she put them in a very flat vase full of water, and so it was just the flowers, and they would sit in the tea room in the middle of the table, and it was beautiful. So that was another way that I saw them displayed, was not, you know, on their stems in a vase, but just the flower heads upright in
like a little
lotus. Yes. Oh, it was beautiful, yeah.
I've seen camellias displayed that way as well. Mm. So you could do camellias and hellebores. Yeah.
When Lindy Harris used to work, which she will not come on this gardening show, she's an incredible font of knowledge. When she was working at Karanga, she used to do that with a lot of the native, with a lot of native flowers too. Some of the tomasias, those ones that also hung upside down, come to think of it, floated really well. Mm. Yeah. So you just get these like little bowls of purpley pinks, and so it's really cute. Yeah,
very sweet. There you go, nifty idea. A keen listener from northeastern Victoria has texted in to say, could you remind everybody, particularly regional listeners, that they're able to hear the program live on their mobile phones through the Community Radio Plus app? You can get it on all the app stores. And you know what? I use this app to listen to the show when I'm sitting in bed.
That's what I use too. Me too.
Well, there you go. Because I'm like, the radio's at the other end of the house. I want to sit in bed with my coffee.
Amen. Yeah, the app's fantastic. It doesn't crash.
No, it doesn't crash.
Yeah, it doesn't freeze up the rest of my phone. It's great.
Yeah.
Community Radio Plus app. It's a bright pink icon.
Mm, very handy tip there. Thank you so much for that, keen listener. We have a call on from Sonia from Broadmeadows. Now, Sonia, you've got pruning grapes questions. Is that right?
Not just grapes, mainly kiwi fruit.
Oh, and kiwis, yep.
I have some kiwi fruit on both sides of my house. We use it not so much for the fruit. We use it for green leaves during summer,
mm-hmm.
and they get shade for shade.
Perfect.
On both sides. We also have a grape vine with the same attitudes. But what we've found, of course, is that we haven't pruned them.
Ah.
And now, for circumstances, but now, of course, the buds are starting and the sap is rising. The question is, can we prune them without destroying them? And if so, is there something special we should do? Or do we just sort of pray to God and hope it all works?
Well, I suppose the thing would be, do you want them to set fruit or not this year? You're not fussed?
No, I want the shade.
You just want the shade. Then, I mean, kiwis and grapes are both really prolific with their new growth. So personally, I would have said that, yes, you can just prune them to keep them in shape even now, especially as you're not worried about cutting off any fruiting bits. Kiwis in particular can get really, really heavy, the plants. So they're notorious for needing really, really heavy structures to grow on. So I'd say if you don't keep it in check, then yes, it could get quite extreme.
Yeah.
Anyone else want to add something?
Chloe, do kiwi fruits fruit on first year growth?
Or second can't remember. Year? She would need a male and a female, though, with the kiwi,
wouldn't
she?
But she doesn't want fruit. If you're not fussed on fruit, that's right.
Yeah.
You'd probably just thin out the growth instead of, you could prune however you want if you're not fussed on, but you probably would look nicer because of the habit if it was thinned out, like selectively prune out branches right back to the base.
Oh, really? That far?
Yeah. So you leave some long stems. And then other ones just to thin it out so that it doesn't get too heavy, cut them back, right back to the plant.
Yeah, and cut the branches that you want to branch out, if that makes sense. So if there's a specific spot where you want more branches, just snip above that tip and hopefully we'll shoot out some more branches.
That's a good tip. So if you've got bald spots in your shade. Yeah.
But I don't grow kiwis simply because I know they go very big and prolific.
Yeah.
So I reckon you couldn't kill it.
Yeah, they're pretty full-on plants.
Yeah, that's see. Oh, that's really good. And then maybe next year, or I do get the occasional fruit on it, and therefore I could find out which branch did it, and I could mark a little bit of coloured paint or something so that I would know. But that could be for next year.
But
thank you very much. So in other words, I can go out, prune it according to what I feel I need for shade.
Yes.
Next year, think about the questions of fruit.
Yeah, for sure. And things like grapes, you know, even commercially grown grapes, you know, they're pruned in a couple of different ways. They'll cane prune them, or they'll, what's the other name when they prune the little down really short?
Spurs.
Spurs, thank you. They'll spur prune them. So even grapevine vineyards will either prune to have long, whippy canes that they then wind in the spaces where they want them to go, which is what you could do if you're trying to fill in a bald spot. Or if you're really trying to encourage more whippy growth, then you could, yes, spur prune them right down to the main growing branch, right, if that makes sense.
And that's now. I can do this now.
Because you're not fussed on whether you're going to have fruit or not, yes, you could do it now. Yes. If you wanted fruit, then we'd say, no, yeah, don't do it now.
For if you ever get to the point where you're wanting fruit off it, Bulleen Art and Garden have some really good information on growing and pruning kiwi fruit on their website.
They do, yep.
No, do tell me. I've searched and searched for information on that. Could you tell me again, what does it contact?
So if you Bulleen Art and Garden, so it's a nursery in Bulleen, their website, they've got a lot of information on their website about a lot of different stuff, but the kiwi fruit page is really useful.
Oh,
I send students to it often for a lot of different things.
Yep, really good. The other one that I find quite good, particularly if you're wanting some videos, is Daily's Fruit YouTube. They often have videos. I'm not sure if they've got grapes or kiwis, but it'd be worth checking out Daily's Fruit YouTube. They've often got videos and little tutorials on YouTube.
So that's Bulleen Gardening?
Bulleen Art and Garden.
Art and Garden.
That's yeah, I think the website's BAG, B-A-A-G, yeah.
.com.au. Art and Garden. And then the other, Daily Fruit, it has general information on pruning.
Fruit trees in general, they've got loads of
and
information.
And it's Daily's D-A-L-E-Y-S.
Mm.
D-A-L-E-Y-S, okay. Oh, look, that's extremely helpful. I can go out, because when they weep, I start to cry for them. You see? So I now know I'm not overly harming them. No. I literally do, you know. Okay,
thanks so much, Sonia. Bye. What fun. We've had... Can you talk about the Pomonal Flower Show on the 4th and the 5th of October? Yes, we can. It's an annual event held since 1983, held at the Pomonal Hall, nestled in the beautiful Grampians Ranges, just 10 minutes from Halls Gap, showcasing hundreds of named native species, all picked from local gardens, and you can buy native plants, books and refreshments, says Jill from Blackrock. Ooh, that sounds good, doesn't it?
I have been to a number of Pomonal Flower Shows, and it's the wildflower show in Victoria to end all other wildflower shows.
Ooh.
It's just phenomenal. And the show was on Gardening Australia last week. So if you want to jump on and catch, Millie was up there. They filmed at the flower show last year, and they've put it out just before this year's. It's beautiful. And Pomonal has got absolutely ravaged by bushfires the last couple of years. So it'd be really good if people take a trip up to, you know, it's the Grampians in springtime.
Mm.
It's beautiful. It's really beautiful and worth a trip.
Good tip. Paul has texted in to say he was in Kyneton this week and there are literally millions of daffodils throughout the whole town. It seems every house in the town has lots of them and thus creating a town full of thousands of gardeners. What's such a good idea? If only all our inner city councils could adopt the same idea. So it's worth heading out to Kyneton. It's only an hour by train or car from the city, says Paul. Oh, that sounds really beautiful, doesn't it?
When you drive through those really cute country towns and there's, you know, a little old weatherboard house and then the daffodils have just been let to go, you know, wild.
Yep.
It's so pretty.
Yeah. They're gorgeous. A good one to leave to naturalise, actually. Mm. So, yeah, good tip there. Speaking of yellow things, Chloe, your desk is very yellow and fluffy.
Yes, fluffy and yellow. I brought in, so on every year, at the start of September, I post this species on Instagram because it's so beautiful. And this genus is such an underrated genus that people really should know more of. So I bought in two species of Pomaderis today. One of their common names is the native dogwood. But this species here is Pomaderis lanigera. So lanigera means woolly. And the common name for this one is the woolly Pomaderis. It's got sort of muted, darker green leaves. They're massive teasers, these pomodoros, because they produce flower buds probably late autumn, early winter,
mm-hmm.
and the flower buds just sit there on the plant for months. And you're like, oh, cool, it's producing flowers, it's going to flower soon, wicked. And then they just hang there. And then spring hits. And for me, Pomodoros lanigera, of the pomodoros that I grow, is the first one to open up. And mm-hmm. it is like sunshine bright.
Mm, yeah.
And the whole plant is covered from top to bottom of this. This is from Mum's garden. And we put one. She's got south-facing the front yard. There's a little garden in front of the house. It's a south-facing, so, and very, very clayey soil. So not a lot of direct sunlight, but it's not dark. And pomodoros are really good at growing in dry shade.
Mm.
Mum's got clay soil, pretty heavy clay, and yeah, not a lot of direct sunlight. So we put the pomodoros lanigera there. It's about 1.5 by 1.5 metres, and be close to 10 years old now, and I don't think it's going to get any bigger. You can lightly prune them after they've flowered just to maintain a bit of density. And I just, it's so bright and it's so happy. Yeah,
it looks like a fluffy pom-pom.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, so they're, you know, massive, big clusters of teeny tiny flowers. It's so cute. And they're really low maintenance. They're real, as I said, they're really tolerant of low light and dry spots and hardened soils.
What sort of height?
This one is about, well, probably, this is Pomodoros lanigera dwarf. So it,
okay.
Which you will see at some retail nurseries. Karanga usually has it in all the time. So it's about 1.5 metres it should stop at. Mm-hmm. If the regular species of lanigera will get a little bit taller, it might get to 2 or 3 metres. But you don't usually see that in cultivation. It's usually the dwarf one that you can get
mm-hmm.
at nurseries. And this dwarf one has a brighter flower colour than the regular species form.
Oh.
Because it's the brightest, it's one of the brightest species of pomodoros.
Okay.
So,
and maybe if
lanigera.
Lanigera. If people had an aversion to wattle because it made them sneeze or sniff, and they still wanted yellow fluff
flowers,
this would be perfect.
Yeah, great idea. Yeah, absolutely. It would definitely fit the bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And can I tell you about the other
pomodoros? Yeah, go for
it. So I brought in another one. This is Pomodoros elliptica. I've got mm-hmm. this one's in my front garden. It's a younger plant and it's only just started to come open, but these are a more pale yellow
yep.
colour. Got a little bit of lime, bit of pale green to them as well. This also holds on to its buds for ages, and they just get, the closer you get to spring, they get brighter and brighter and brighter.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the bright yellow, it's just more of a vibrant
buttery yellow.
Yeah,
buttery colour. So Pomodoros elliptica doesn't have, so it's not woolly like the other species, it's got more of a shiny leaf. It's a large shrub, so it can get up to 3, even in some areas I've seen it about 4 metres
mm-hmm.
and completely covered. They all hedge really well, so they respond really well to pruning. Elliptica is at Cranbourne Gardens in a couple of different spots, and it handles the wind really well. So there's a big row of them in the forest garden against a fence at Cranbourne that would get really hammered by the strong winds that sweep across Cranbourne Gardens, and they're doing really well. Bright, shiny green, you know, dark green leaf, and they're in full sun at Cranbourne Gardens, but they do really well in shade or part shade, and very prunable, really good screening plant if you want something that's a bit darker green.
Yep.
And in a more shadier spot.
The pruning would help to keep them, you know, from not going nude in the middle, does it?
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah, and Mum's is probably a little bit, I reckon Mum, if you're listening, probably needs a bit of a harder prune. She will be. Needs a bit of a harder prune this year because there was a bit of a gap in the middle.
After flowering, yep.
Definitely, yeah. And elliptica, I'll see. So the specimen that I've got, it is the most perfect little dome at the moment. Ooh, it's only about half a metre mm-hmm. and just this really lovely little shape. And I haven't done much to it actually, and I transplanted it when it was a year old, moved it 50 centimetres. that's good. They transplant when they're young. But, yeah, I think at Cranbourne they probably prune them after flowering once a year. You could hit them with a hedge trimmer or you could use secateurs on them.
Okay.
And there, you came across a pomodoros at the Cranbourne Gardens tour last week, I believe, Kat.
That's where I heard about them for the first time, because Roger was taking a group with John Arnott and Matt Henderson, and then he picked up this plant. And, I mean, the word pomodoros is just fun to say, so it stuck in my mind. But, yeah, I was intrigued by the pom-pom-like flowers.
Yeah.
And there is a little snippet of him talking about that on my socials. But now I can't help but see it in places around, and I'm like, oh, it's a pomodoros. But, yeah, I'm going to have a look at the different types.
Yeah.
Now. Yeah.
You can get pomodoros, if anyone's on a budget, you can find pomodoros, like some of the local ones, in tube stock at local Indigenous nurseries.
Oh, good tip.
Pomodoros aspera is one of the most common ones we've got around Melbourne. It's sort of a shrubby understory plant. So, again, it grows well under trees, under established trees.
Can you propagate them from cuttings?
You can. Yeah, apparently they can take a little while to strike, but I struck them pretty easily when I was at Cranbourne Gardens. So, but they are definitely, you know, a heel cutting or a semi-hardwood cutting. And there'd be plenty – once they've finished flowering, there'd be plenty of –
I feel like I've got material. A good spot for that.
Oh, good.
Yeah, sound really hardy.
There's a really cute ground cover species, Pomodoros aurea, the gold pomodoros, and they don't get much more than a metre.
Yeah.
By a metre. Actually, they're probably under that height. And they just, again, they've got the bright, fluffy flowers. So there's so many different species in the genus, and there's ground covers all the way up to really large shrubs. And again, like shady, dry spots.
They sound like they'd be good under gums.
Yeah, they definitely. Mm. And you will see, particularly in Melbourne and, you know, our very tall mountain ash forests, you will see Pomodoros aspera growing underneath it, which is the hazel wood or something like that.
Okay.
It's a common name.
Mm.
Yeah. But I asked Roger what species it was that he was holding up. And I'm not familiar with this one. It's Coco Piranha.
Oh.
That's a fun name.
What a good name.
There is Coco.
Coco Piranha from the Cocopara Range in New South Wales.
Awesome.
Yeah, but I haven't seen that one in cultivation. Not in Melbourne. It might be a local species that people could get from an Indigenous nursery up that way. But, yeah, it's a really special genus, and I love them so much, and they're pretty low maintenance, and you get really cool flowers off them.
I can picture that the bees would like them, do they?
Hoverflies, I see on them a bit. Yes. Yeah, probably a little bit more. Oh, yeah, bees are obviously an insect. But, yeah, a lot of different insects do love them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
No, yep. Perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, good job. Well, there has been a question about repeating the Otway's Open Gardens. Sure, it is the – I don't know if it was Open Gardens, was it? Did I miss one? Or was it the Great Otway Garden Festival? Is that the one that we were talking about?
I think so.
It
was that one.
Yeah, so the Great Otway Garden Festival in Apollo Bay, and it sounds like it's a combination of an event physically but also local open gardens and community gardens. So if you head to Google Great Otway Garden Festival, the details are 10 till 3 on the weekend of Saturday the 4th of October and Sunday the 5th of October. So I hope that helps. We've had a question from... Oh, no name. Good morning, everyone. Here we go. This is Kerry and Ben Brooker from Treasured Perennials. Hi, guys. Could you please remind everyone about our 3CR fundraising event? We're screening Kiss the Ground with a Q&A session afterwards with Annie Field from Short Acre Farm, Craig Castry from Edible Gardens by Craig Castry, and also Ben. Kiss the Ground offers valuable solutions to climate change and the idea of locking carbon into our soils to stabilise the Earth's climate. There are affiliated stalls and demonstrations on low-cost gardening alternatives and light refreshments. The event is 11:30 till 4 p.m. with the screening at 1 p.m. at the Fernie Creek Horticultural Society in Sassafras. Tickets are only $15 through Try Booking, and we're designing the day to inspire people to garden in a healthier way for themselves and the planet. Great work, guys. It sounds like a good event. So, again, perhaps a Google on Fernie Creek Horticultural Society events will get you to the Try Booking site for that. So, good work.
all these events are really getting me excited to get outside.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like out of hibernation.
Yeah.
I know. If we could just have some nice weather, please. Although I won't say no to the rain that we've been having.
Oh, amen. Mm. My gosh, we don't need it.
Oh, we don't, don't we? Josie's high team, the Fabalium Squam, I'm not even going to try.
Squamulosum.
Thanks, Chloe. Is looking fabulous at the moment in my garden. What does that one look like?
Funnily enough, Josie, in Mum's garden, there's Pomodoro slanidra dwarf, and then right next to it is a Fabalium squamulosum.
Ah.
Another fantastic plant that's a forest understory plant that grows really well in dry, shady spots.
Ooh.
and harder soils.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a muted, it's got muted greens and browns to it, mm-hmm. but a really bright yellow flower.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few different, it's a very varied species, so you can get like a bright yellow flower or pale yellow and broad foliage and fine foliage.
Hmm.
Some nurseries will have Fabalium squamulosum, but Karanga has a really big range of different Fabalium squamulosums. Yep.
Good tip.
Yeah, it's a beautiful one.
Yeah. Nice. Completely agree with Chloe. Love Pomodoro, says Jean. There you go. I think she's converted us all. Don't worry. I think she definitely has. Cass, I was going to ask you about some of the plants that you learnt about in your article on Lakbundup in the Organic Gardener magazine.
Ooh.
Were there any standouts from...
Every time I go to that garden, there is new stuff in flower.
Yeah, and you go, ooh.
Yeah.
And it's designed that way. Well, it's part of the testing process because the ultimate aim is to have a garden in flower 365 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, that will involve seeing how they... when they pop up,
yep,
and then how they interact with other plants in their communities. But, yeah, in the article, Jack Semler from Superbloom,
mm-hmm.
she has given us some picks. Now, the ones that were out when I was there, this is Stanthe grandiflora.
Oh.
So when I first went to the garden in March, that was everywhere. It's a bright hot pink.
Hot pink, magenta hot pink, yeah.
And it is on these long stems and it's facing upwards, the flower, and it bobs in the wind and the bees love it. So that is what they've kind of called the star of the show over that early March through to winter. And a lot of people it's become on a lot of people's radar. So that was still in flower the other day, actually, when we went.
You know, it must be on so many people's radar because while I was subbing this, I was like Googling the plant names while I was doing it. And I was like, ooh, I need some of that.
Yeah.
Do you think I could find any?
No.
No. So I've put my, my email address on the wait list for a bunch of nurseries that do stock it. So heads up, if you do want it, go and stick your name on the email list for when it's back in stock.
Yeah, so I remember Russell, when I was talking to him, he did say, it's not weedy, but they are having to, curate it because it is popping up everywhere. But really good to know. Yeah,
so if particularly in the style of the plantings that they're doing, it's probably being a bit too boisterous, is it?
Mm. Yeah, it's taking over.
Yeah.
It's a star. It's got really fine, droopy, weepy flowers, but it's a succulent plant. Yes. It's a really, it's a mobile immobile in that it's chunky and it doesn't move, but the flowers are up and out there and they're floating around.
Mm. That was, I couldn't believe it was a succulent when I saw it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's so fascinating. So that was beautiful. That was the star of the show. What else? The Selvier Yangi. I'm not sure if that's how I say it.
Yeah. Is it a double I?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yangi I.
Yangi I.
Double I, pronounce it E-I.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's the... how would I describe it, Chloe? It's purple and I'm doing hand actions, which no one can see. But it sits quite high above the planting and just is this beautiful backdrop plant. So that is, again, on the list. And then the Wallenbergia stricta.
I think that one's the isotoma that you're pointing to. Wallenbergia looks lovely.
That one, yeah.
The bright bluey purple flowers.
Yes. Yeah.
The isotoma is is a native plant in there. It's really taken off.
Mm.
Russell's had to do a lot of pruning on that one.
Yeah.
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 So that's stunning. The thing. It's a mix of Australian native indigenous, but then also introduced species as well. So it's fascinating. I'm learning lots about native plants through writing about the article.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, good work. No, great article. Another plug for the mag. So you can go and pick that up. It's in stores now and also in newsagents as well. So it's in the Organic Gardener magazine, the spring issue with the tomatoes on the cover. If you'd like to read about the Luckbundup Test Garden and learn about some incredible plants that I feel like everyone's now Googling and trying to add to cart.
Yeah.
I know, I was like, when I put a few of them in the article, I was like, I almost don't want to tell people.
There'll be competition now.
Completely agree. You're like, I want to keep this secret
for me.
And isn't the whole point of the test garden as well to find, like, really drought-tolerant species so you don't have to water it at all?
It is, yeah.
Because I've been really loving that idea. I'm like, okay, if it works there, then I don't have to, like, try and look after it too hard.
They are watering. Oh,
they are a little bit.
A little. Yeah.
There is an irrigation system.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But it's essentially going to be a gigantic rooftop garden, the rooftop gardens are very shallow, so the plants there will dry out easily, and windy will dry plants out too, so they need to be,
harsh conditions.
Yeah.
And I think it's that fact that they're going for the, you know, the meadow that changes throughout the seasons, which I find really appealing. And it's the fact it's a mix of exotics and natives, which is lovely.
Yeah, I've heard Russell and Jack say that part of the, you know, the mixed plantings is because Melbourne culturally is really mixed. So they want people to connect with the garden and go, oh, I remember that from, you know, where I grew up. You know, wherever that was, which is really nice.
Yeah, it was part of the conversation with Auntie Gail, who is an elder and actually named the garden Luckbundup, which means heaven's beauty. And she wanted whoever came to the garden to find a piece that helped them connect back to where they've come from. So that's why, again, it's a metaphor for community and inclusion and connection.
Yeah. That beautiful space.
Mm.
Connie, I'm going to jump over to your article in the mag. Connie's been writing for Organic Gardener for a while now, haven't you?
Yeah, I think over a year now.
Oh, there you go.
I've got to remind myself which article this is.
It's confusing, isn't it? Because I've commissioned a few from Connie since you wrote this one. So Connie has often been a contributor for, obviously, edible and flower stories, but in this particular issue you've written a seasonal trio, which is a DPS, double-page spread, which includes a flower, a fruit and a herb.
Yes.
So you've included. Do you want to tell us about what you've included?
So I have a favourite from each category. I've got zinnias, watermelons, specifically small space ones like sugar baby watermelon, which we mentioned before, and shiso, which is like a Japanese basil of sorts. It's got really beautiful frilly leaves. And if you've ever had sushi and you've seen that little plastic grass thing as like decor or garnish, that's actually meant to be like fake shiso. Because, so if you go somewhere where they're a little bit more elevated, they'll add the real shiso. So these three are all really great to think about sowing right now. They all add a bit of interest to the garden, our zinnias, for all that beautiful colour. Back in the day, there were more like vibrant kind of zinnias, but we've got a lot of pastel ones coming through as well, which is really nice, and it's something different. Watermelons, I really like the smaller varieties here in Melbourne because we don't really have such a long season. So I find those do better because they're a bit more early season. So you can find your top tips on that in this article as well. And shiso, I will say that it's one of those things that are a little bit hard to start because they have very small seeds and they do have some specific conditions. But once you get them going for the first season, let them flower, set seed, and you'll never have to sow them again. Because they sow
seeds. That's so weird that something that can be really hard to start the seeds will then set
seed. I know. It's kind of weird. I think probably because they need to be kept moist. And so me, I don't do as good a job when I'm kind of like sowing my seeds and like then watering them. I now miss my seeds, but I used to use just even a small fine watering can. Like that spray would be
too big.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't know. Nature really knows how to do its thing.
It does.
Yeah.
I've even heard production nurseries bemoaning how hard she so is to sprout from seed.
Yeah.
So yeah, you've included some tips in there, which is good because yeah, I'm sort of thinking, gosh, if production nurseries can roll their eyes at sprouting,
it's quite funny because once you get started. Oh, I've had like 100 just pop up.
Yeah.
Yeah, in my garden after that. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you just need one.
Yes, you just need one successful specimen.
It's a bit like amaranth. You just need one.
Yes, same.
So true.
And your watermelons, are you starting them from seed now or a little bit later?
Yes. So I do it two ways. Mm-hmm. I start a set from seed now. So I feel like I can't start them too early. Okay, watermelons, I find very, very sulky when I transplant them.
Yep.
I don't know if you found that. That's like probably my biggest challenge. It's the transplanting because once I put them out in the garden, I tend to spend less effort watering them and they really need that water to kind of settle in. Mm-hmm. And if you just like touch the root too much, I swear it just dies on you. So I will start my seeds now as like one batch, but then I will also direct so as like a backup in the same spot or nearby in case the one I transplant dies.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So again, that's probably the biggest challenge with watermelons, but after that, it's pretty easy.
Mm.
You often hear the watermelons, like you shouldn't water them too much because of the fruit becoming like more watery and bland, but I find that you actually have to water them a lot for the majority of the life. Mm-hmm. It's only like at the end, once that watermelon is at full size, that you hold back.
Yep.
Because if you don't water it too much when it's growing, it won't be good. It likes water. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's about condensing the sugars apparently into the fruit, that reduction in watering just before you harvest it.
Yes. So. But I mean in Melbourne, like our summers are so dry, I don't think you can really overdo the watering come that time.
Yeah, well, it might seem like a lot of water to us to have to water them consistently or more so than the rest of the veggie patch, but it's not it's a right amount for the watermelons.
Yeah, it's a dry time of the year.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen watermelon farms, I think on a story on Landline a few years ago, just these up in the Northern Territory.
Oh, wow.
It's like almost flood irrigating these giant paddocks, massive paddocks of watermelon.
I think I want to start growing them in like wicking beds. I think they would love that.
Clever.
Yeah.
Yep.
Haven't yet, but
report back.
Yes, I should. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I've got to say I'm a big fan of the wicking beds.
Yes.
And I've converted two of my six to wicking beds.
Yeah.
And I put in there the things that are a little bit more fussy in terms of, you know, if they don't get water on that really hot day.
Yeah.
And I put like a zucchini in one and a zucchini in a non-wicking bed. And oh my God, the one in the wicking bed.
Okay.
Yeah. So
your apple crates that you've converted, is that what you've done?
Apple crates, yes. So I've converted two of them and now I'm sort of saying to hubby, okay, we'll do the other four and he's like, oh really?
Because you have to empty them out.
It's a bit harder to do it like after. I also regret not starting off with wicking beds. Because like back then it was there's a lot more products out there that makes it a little bit more easier. When I've like initially, it would always be like that scoria layer and then the piping and then the geotextile fabric. I was like, that's too much. But now, like, I'm looking into converting mine back because, anything that I've had with that constant supply of moisture has done really well, as long as it's a plant that can live in those conditions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I even chucked a billy button in into one corner. It's huge.
Yeah,
it's smothered in flowers. Yeah. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Because it's so frustrating. There's a roundabout near me that grows billy buttons wild. Okay.
Oh,
wow. And yet every time I've tried planting one at my place,
Is it the runoff from your steep kind of
it must
block?
Be, but I've, I mean, I've got beds where they are more irrigated, but they're all very free draining because they're all raised beds.
Yeah.
So I think it's the fact that everything's free draining.
Yeah. Wicking beds perfect for you then.
They're perfect for wicking beds because I learned this the hard way and I didn't do some research before I planted the billy button. So Pycnosaurus globosus.
Yeah.
And they grow in grasslands, but in depressions in grasslands.
The boggy bits,
The wet bits. So they need, and I've moved them in my garden, move them like a metre and to a spot that's a bit moister.
Yep.
and they're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's why this roundabout must grow them, because it's the bottom of sort of three roads that converge.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that must be why. That
yeah, that'd be it.
Yeah.
Actually, one other thing that grows really well in wicking beds, berries, like raspberries or your brambles. Oh, they go absolutely bonkers. They love the water. Yeah. So I just recently turned all my berries into like wicking bed pots. Yeah.
Such a good idea.
Oh, nice. Excited for that. I like outsourcing my watering.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
And it's more efficient.
And if you if you're going away in summer over Christmas, it's one less thing to worry about, because thinking about, you know, you put so much effort into your veggie garden and fruit growing and whatever, and you go away over summer at some point, you're like, oh, I hope the tap timer doesn't blow up, or hope I've set it up properly. And it's, one less thing to worry about.
Yeah. Big fan.
Oh, the stress, yes. No, I'm definitely going to convert more. Whoops, sorry, I just banged the microphone with my head. For those of you who've tuned in, we've only got 15 minutes of the show, but you are listening to Chloe Thompson. That's me, Connie Cow, Chloe Foster and Cass Dowding. Yes, there are four C's in the room. Connie's waving a tulip at me. As you do.
We're talking
stick. It's beautiful.
Oh, I actually wanted to talk about, like, the excitement of actually having a tulip to bring.
Oh.
So,
yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
A very tall flower stem.
Oh, thank you. I would be happy with any flower stem at this stage.
Uh-oh, what's the story?
Because, yes, so the first year I grew tulips, like 5 years ago, they were great. Just grew them wherever, they were fine. The next year I grew them, oh my God, all the rats like just came and found, like the rodents. So tulip bulbs, rodents just love them. I found out the hard, expensive way. So I did that for 2 years in a row, and like the rodents just came and dug them all up. They would find them very strategically in the garden. So I'm like, I can't waste any more money on this. So I was like thinking about how to do it. And so this year I came up with an idea. And what I did was I put my tulip bulbs in one raised garden bed, which was kind of difficult to protect in some ways, because I was trying to figure out how to do that. And what I figured out is I've put a big strip of aviary mesh on top. So I've kind of enclosed the entire bed, and I cleared that bed out, so it was just bulbs. So I was able to do that. Normally I do like more of a mixed planting. I pinned that down on the side with irrigation pegs. And the extra thing I did was I put a border of daffodils around it. So rodents don't go for daffodil bulbs. I think they're toxic or something. I can't remember. So that was like an added deterrent, because usually a bit of mesh won't do it, because they'll grow, they'll like dig under the bed or something. But I feel like that kind of like two-step approach really helped.
That's clever.
Because I got tulips and I'm so excited. Thank you.
And so you're laying the mesh horizontally on the soil.
Yeah. And I did like an overhang as well, just to kind of cover it like a lid. Yeah. And so once the foliage comes up, that's when your tulips are safe. So I took the mesh off then. And yeah, I was away last week, came back, and my first tulips came out, and I was just so happy. So yeah, I've sacrificed one, I've cut it, and I brought it here to share. Yeah.
Very pretty.
So yeah, if anyone has like any problems with rodents, try that.
For sure. No, good tip. I've definitely not had rodents eating the bulbs before, but it's generally possums in my area. But actually, I've got me thinking about the hellebore.
Yeah.
If people have problems with rabbits or deer, the hellebores are rabbit and deer resistant, because they're toxic as well. So they won't go for them, which is handy.
Yeah.
Especially if people live on property and want to underplant big swathes with hellebores.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that they'd go for like flowers. I mean, rats love ranunculus as well.
The flowers.
No, the corms. That was another issue I had one year. I know, because I planted a whole like patch of them, and I did them really strategically, 15 centimetres apart. My goodness, the next day, 15 centimetres apart, holes, and they'd all been dug up. So, yeah.
Isn't that funny? They're such weird-looking corms. They don't look edible at all, do they?
But they go for them only before they sprout as well. So now I pre-sprout those. I do those in trays. Once they're sprouted, I put them in, and they're fine. Yeah. My rats are very hungry, ambitious.
They know where to come for a feed. How annoying.
Yeah.
Do you trap them?
I I have in the past, I feel like it's like not always successful. I feel like I have very smart ones. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they are.
I feel like
smart.
The ones in urban areas are very smart. My biggest, like, the easiest way that I found and most efficient is probably excluding them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That way they literally just can't get in.
Yeah.
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 Tricky little buggers.
Yeah. They are rather, aren't they? Oh, we've got someone chatting about tulips. Margot from Kyneton, you wanted to chat about tulips.
I did.
Morning, Margot.
Hello.
Hello, everyone. Just to let you know that the Kyneton Friends of the Botanic Gardens, up there, last year we planted about 1,500 plus tulips.
Oh, I heard about that.
Wow. And then this year, May, we planted another 1,000.
Oh,
and they're
amazing.
All just starting to bloom. And we planted early season, late season, mid-season types. So they'll be going for, you know, a good couple of months. So, fuel for the fire to come up to Kyneton and have a look.
Another reason to visit. I love visiting Kyneton.
It's so cute.
Lots of good cafes and op shops.
I was about to say, the little vintagey op shops in Kyneton. I've got some gems from some of those.
So. Margot, have you got daffodils flowering at the gardens at the moment?
I don't want to see another daffodil.
They have so many there.
I know. When we were talking about them before, I was like, oh, I wonder if Margot's got heaps at Kyneton.
Oh, no, we have. We've got heaps, and I keep finding new little ones. I go, oh, I wouldn't mind a little patch of those and blah, blah, blah. But the tulips, too, I planted in my own garden out in the field where it's not fenced. I planted a whole lot of tulips thinking I'm so clever, and the rabbits ate every single one.
Oh,
so,
no. Before they even sprouted?
Oh, no, they sprout and then they eat them.
Oh.
Just chomp, chomp, chomp. So now they're in pots and looking fantastic. So, yeah, and we've also just put in a new native garden at the Botanic Gardens last week.
We planted. Amazing. I feel like we need a trip down.
Yes. What did you put in?
Oh, we put in Banksias, leptosperms, Lazio petalums, lots of things. Ground covers, Lamantras, Dianellas, all the usual suspects.
Ripper.
But I really don't think I think we're going to have to add some Phthalums and what's the other one?
Pomaderas.
Yes.
And I just wanted to ask, are they frost tolerant? Because as you know, we get terrible frost.
Yeah. Let me get back to you on that. Oh, yeah, I'm not quite sure because their understory, I think they might be to a degree, but I'm not sure how frost tolerant they are.
Mm. Okay.
I'm going to have a look at that and I'll send you a message.
Mm. Oh, lovely. Thank you so much. We're enjoying your book, Chloe.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much, Margot, for calling in.
Okay. Cheerio, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, Chloe, I've just had a message come through from I'm going to drop him in it. Roger Elliott has messaged me.
Mm-hmm.
He just says he wonders if it's a bit too late to prune grapes and kiwis at the moment because the sap flow is really high.
Oh.
So if Sonia's still listening, wait another 6 or so weeks until it's slowed down a little bit because otherwise they bleed a lot.
Sure. Good tip. Yeah. I know they're fine to summer prune, so yeah, that kind of does make sense.
But maybe not a spring prune.
Maybe not
I haven't grown them before, so I'm a bit of a rookie with that.
Yeah. Okay. Good tip. Thanks for that, Roger. Yeah. So maybe just leave it until a summer prune. At least then by that time, Sonia would really understand which are the whippy bits that are, you know, growing in the wrong spots, wouldn't she?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they go a bit nuts.
Yes.
Yeah, she'd be like, oi, that's blocking.
Yeah, let it go nuts at the moment in springtime and then work out what you need to pair back.
And, you know, some of those nuts bits might be bits that you can then tie into the wires and things to, hide bald spots where she's not getting the shade that she needs. Such a good idea, though, to use those deciduous plants to shade, you know, north or west-facing walls or windows in the summertime. It's very, very eco-friendly and a really, you know, it's literally a living shade cloth, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then with grapes, like, you get the autumn colour.
So pretty.
And then the sun comes through in winter.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, and a really clever, neat little trick there. Sue says the rabbits will actually dig up the hellebores for their roots at their place. Oh, my God, Sue. Maybe they don't eat the foliage, but there you go. They're doing a rat thing. They've learned from Connie's rats and they're going for the roots.
They've evolved.
Oh, yeah. How annoying. That's really upsetting. So we are coming towards the end of the show, which I always find so bizarre because it always flies through so quickly. Has anyone got any events that you want to... Oh, I was going to say events and Connie's holding up another list. Has anyone... No one's got another event. No. But Connie's got a plant she wants to talk about quickly.
Oh, I have many plants, but this is just a pandan leaf. If I'm not sure if you've tried pandan before. It's a really popular plant in Southeast Asia and it's got a vanilla-y kind of, I say vanilla-y coconut kind of smell. Wow. If you like smell the leaf, I guess you can't smell it here. Also, I've completely smelled all the like fragrance out of it. But it's very frost sensitive because it's a tropical.
So how do you grow it here?
Yeah, so I'm really excited because my pandan plant is still alive. It's 3 years old and I figured out how to keep it alive throughout the cooler season. And it's basically treating it as a house plant.
Oh.
Just like, you know, your monsteras and everything, which are all like subtropical, tropical plants.
Mm-hmm.
I grow mine outside in summer, but as it cools down, so they're very sensitive. So when it's like 10 degrees, it's already starting to become too cool. So I take mine inside and it's the reverse of of acclimatizing seeds to go outdoors, you know? So you've kind of got to bring it in a little bit slowly just so it doesn't get shocked. So I do that, leave it in for the winter, take it back out in like late spring, and you can keep it alive for multiple years.
Cool.
Yeah, and so get pandan in Melbourne.
Is it water hungry as well? So
it is. It likes constant moisture, but it doesn't like to be like completely drowned. So it will suffer from root rot. It's hard to say that word.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit fussy, but for anybody who does like pandan, it can definitely be grown here.
Cool. Yeah, maybe really a self-watering pot or a wicking bed? No?
I'm not sure. I feel like maybe that could be too much.
Too much.
But it depends on how often you water as well.
True.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, good tip. That's one to definitely try. I do love an excuse to push the boundaries and give things a shot. Someone's texted in asking, where can the Canidia nigricans minstrel be purchased? It has black and white flowers, unlike the others, that is black and yellow.
Yeah, that's...
The minstrel.
That's not going to be an easy cultivar to get. I'd be getting into... Australian Plant Society groups and to see who's growing it. You might be able to get it at one of those, but I don't even think Karanga grows it.
But Stephen Ryan had them. He has lots of interesting plants.
He does. I don't think he would be growing minstrel. Yeah. That's going to be hard to get hold of.
That's a Googling rabbit hole, I feel like.
Australian Plant Society groups and people might be someone in the APS growing it.
Yeah, and I found Facebook groups good for those type of things. See if there's a Facebook group that's for Australian plant growers or things like that, and then you can pop it up in there. Quite often I've noticed that the nurseries themselves are often in those Facebook groups. And so you'll get the actual, you know, the owner of the nursery replying and giving you the information.
Handy.
Yeah, which is super, super handy. But black and white flowers, whoa.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That'd be pretty stunning.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the black pea flower on that species is really cool. But yeah, black and white.
Very funky. Very funky indeed. As I said, mine's obviously the red flowering one, but it's growing on a cliff face and it grows down the cliff face at my place.
Mm.
So they're pretty hardy.
They are very hardy. Yeah, nigricans grows more upright, like a scrambler.
Okay.
It's a climber. Or if it doesn't have anything to climb on, it'll just scramble over itself.
Yeah.
Got big, bright green leaves and big black flowers on it.
Hmm. Off to Google that one for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Have a look.
Yeah. That's so cool. Just checking with the producers that we did get rid of those 5 copies of the mag. We did. Oh, there we go. Just as well.
Congratulations, listeners.
I know. That was quick. You guys, I heard the phone ringing off its hook. So you guys were really quick there. And actually, on that note, if anyone does read the spring issue of Organic Gardener magazine, really would be keen for some feedback. So, you know, if you wanted to DM me on Instagram or you can email the editorial email address in the mag, we're always keen to hear people's feedback and, get ideas and any info that you have about what you enjoy in the mag. We have, oh my gosh, 2 minutes left. It's time to do the wrap up, guys. So I'd like to give a big thank you out to our producers, Amy and Susie in the booth over there. Thank you so much. Thanks to Daniel Jackson and Liam Killick for doing our socials. They're always so good at putting together those graphics that you see up on our social media. Of course, thank you to our wonderful guests, Cass Dowding, Connie Cow, Chloe Foster. I think this might be the one and only time that we do a four C's R show. And thank you to you, the listeners, for tuning into the 3CR Gardening Show. If you are listening to this as the podcast, we'd really love it if you could leave us a rating and review on whatever platform you are listening from. And don't forget, you can access it via the the community radio app, which means you can listen on the go and you can listen live as well, which is great. So my name is Chloe Thompson. It has been absolutely amazing chatting gardening with you all, and bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.